I'm always honored at my age to speak to any group because I know I'm winding down in the twilight years of my life. So, sounds like I'm about to kill over right here. So, I was at y'all's camp 2 years in a row several years ago, and David brought up a youth group to do a mission trip at our little church where I was preaching for a while. How many of you were on that trip? Anybody in here on that trip? Okay, you got two. All right. But they did a great job with that. And so this is a very important passage to me, and I'll try not to keep you 40 minutes, I hope, anyway. Make sure I'm hitting the right one. This is a little congregation up outside of Nashville that I was youth minister at in college. They needed a guy to come up, and we had an unusual situation. We had 120 members, and 40 of them were teenagers. One-third of the church was teenagers, 7 through 12. It's unbelievable. If you just use your mind's eye, you can almost picture me in college here just about. If you just use your imagination. And I wanted to be in one of the early Elvis movies, but they wouldn't let me. My sideburns were too long and thick. And that's where I met this girl that was mentioned, David, that I lost her 4 years ago yesterday to ALS, one of the worst diseases on the planet. And best person I've ever known. Outside of David, of course. But anyway, let me start with a story here. When I was at this congregation at the ripe old age of 21, teaching a teenage class, and it was on marriage or dating, something like that, and one of the girls named June, I remember June was 16, and she started telling us a story about how when she was 12, she had an operation, she'd never be able to have children. And, you know, sometimes teenagers will drop problems like that in your lap. You know, that's a tough one there. And basically she was asking me, why won't God let me have children? So at the end of our lesson, which won't take 40 minutes, I want to tell you what I told her. And I think the Lord was really with me in what I told her. So this lesson, Romans 8:28. Is about how God takes the crud and the junk of our life and ties in something good. Now, let me do a disclaimer. David and I have been talking about this last couple of days. I don't think the verse means that behind every cloud there's a silver lining, or that when you stump your toe, God will automatically make something good happen from that. I think it's a little deeper than that, and at the end I want to tell you a couple of reasons or a couple of things that I don't think the verse does teach. A few things that I don't think it does teach. You know, Esther saved her country in the book of Esther, and her cousin who had raised her, Mordecai, she didn't want to go before the king to say, hey, we got to help my people out here. And he said, perhaps you've attained royalty for such a time as this. So as I go through some of these examples, I don't know if this is God directly using his providence. Perhaps. Let me give you the first one. As David mentioned, I coached for a long time. Once my wife got sick, I announced that I was going to step down. And I had a good coach friend of mine in Nashville. You know, I announced I had a team in 2016 that went to the state. And then 2 years later, we were 1-17 in the district. We were horrible. We were not even a real good church team. So we went, boom, down real fast. And so Lisa got sick, and I decided to announce about halfway through the season I was going to step down. And I thought, you know, maybe that'll motivate our guys. You know, maybe Lisa will get better, and the team will, you know. Well, Lisa didn't get better. We went 1-17. My friend said it was a real bad Disney movie is what it was. And it really was. But that's one of my sons there on this side over here, the real big one then, and I was coaching Brent, he's number three there, and this story took place. That's eighth grade, and this story took place when he was in the seventh grade, 2 years earlier. Now, in case you think my math is bad, that this picture, he's in the eighth grade, and 2 years earlier he was in the seventh. I'll explain that. After a game, his first eighth grade year, he and some of his teammates, six of his teammates, were in the locker room after a game we had played, and I'd gone out of the locker room, you know, give my little talk, and then stepped out. And they started talking about some things they shouldn't, things that they'd never want to get out of that locker room, inappropriate stuff. And one of the little boys on the team that's not in their little circle of friends went out and told the whole eighth grade, and they were really ticked. And the next practice, after I'd left the locker room again, one of them took a cup of water and diluted some of his urine in it, and they made him drink it. Now, in their demented minds, by the way, I'm glad Lindsay isn't here, because I know she wouldn't have married him had she known this story. So it's so good that she's not here. But in their little demented minds, they thought everything's even. They even went out arm in arm. He betrayed our trust. Now it's even. Well, they went all over the eighth grade. And, they were so mad about that. They were mad at him telling everybody. So then they made him drink the diluted urine. And so he went home, told his girlfriend. Girlfriend told her mom. Her mom called the principal. The principal called me. And I kicked all seven of them off my team. As a coach, it's the hardest thing I've ever dealt with other than having a player get killed right before the season. I actually sent me into a mild depression. It was very difficult for me to deal with. And it was kind of tough on our family because my wife was dealing with me having to do that to the kid. And it's, that spring, something happened in his mind. And he decided to repeat eighth grade. And I was really glad that he did. But what happened was it gave him an extra year in high school to develop. And he wouldn't have been good enough to play at Lipscomb, probably. That's where he was going to go because I had a, teaching there, I get a 50% discount. So that's where he's going to go. If you're not going to go to Lipscomb, you're going to have to pay for it. Well, Fried Hardeman gave him a scholarship, and so he got to play there. Okay? Because he repeated a year. He wouldn't have repeated a year had he not gotten in trouble and kicked off the team. So he wouldn't have met this girl, wouldn't have proposed to her. They would not have had these two grandkids. Okay? I would not know this family had my son not made a kid drink urine. Well, there's Romans 8:28 right there, boys, isn't it? Okay? And we laugh about that, but I really believe that's what happened. Okay? God takes the junk, even mistakes we make, even sins, and can turn it into something positive. Now, the Old Testament version of Romans 8:28 is back in Genesis 50, when Joseph, he's sold by his brothers in a yard sale. He ends up rising to be, vice president of Egypt. And at the end of the story, his daddy dies. Old man Jacob dies. And so the boys are worried that they're going to now get what's coming to them. So this is the McPherson paraphrase version. That's what that means there. So they, just to paraphrase it, they come and say, Daddy, Joseph, you promised Dad you wouldn't harm us when Dad died. Now, what Joseph could have done was, boys, remember when y'all came into Egypt, saw the pyramids? That's where they bury us. We all get one. It's our tomb. It takes 100,000 slaves about 20 years to build just one. You boys are going to build mine by yourself. You better get started. I tell you, during Christmas, I was at Egypt. These things are big. We couldn't get the whole thing in that photo. They're huge. These may be some that they saw. Who knows? But he didn't do that. He didn't do that. Okay, he said, you meant it for evil. God meant it for good in order to save many people. Because if this hadn't happened, he would not have interpreted the Pharaoh's dreams. He wouldn't have been down there. He'd been stuck back up in Canaan. He wouldn't have risen to be in vice Pharaoh. He wouldn't have known to store up the grain. And not only that, he would have died up there with his family in these conditions. So Genesis 50 really tells us this is what's happening. And you can't always see it at the time. It's not always clear. You may not even know in this life. I mean, he wasn't whistling to Canaan's land. You know, he wasn't doing that. Or to Egypt's land, I'm on my way. He didn't know that God was going to turn around and take what was evil and turn it into something good. So I think that's the Old Testament version of Romans 8:28. So again, as Dave and I was talking about, perhaps this is an example. Read about a story in England about a couple was getting divorced. And they were still amicable toward each other, and they met at a restaurant to discuss who was going to get what after the divorce. And so she was staying with her mom at an apartment, and she didn't have a ride, and he was gracious enough to drive his soon-to-be ex-wife back to her apartment. And they had a wreck. It was not critical. But it was serious enough where they both had to go to the hospital. And when the nurses saw the forms that they were filling out where they had checked separated, they put them in the same room together in recovery, not out of spite, but hoping going through the recovery would bring them back together. And it did. And they called off the divorce. And at the end of the article, it said, who would have thought that a motorcycle wreck could result in something good? Now, I don't recommend that for marriage counseling. You know, get your wife on the back. Get ready, honey. We're going into the ditch. You know, you probably can't set it up like that. And we usually can't see it till it's all over. So I'm telling these stories in class one day, and a kid on our ball team raises his hand and says, Coach, my parents met. They lived in an apartment complex. They didn't know each other. A tornado came through and lift part of the roof off of her apartment and threw it down on my future dad's car. And they met out there looking at the damage. He asked her on a date. Probably not a real romantic first date walking around looking at the damage, but that's how they met. And I'm sitting here looking at a kid that's alive because of a tornado. Perhaps that's what God was doing. Sometimes God's gifts are wrapped in strange packages. I have unfortunately had to take a lot of people to rehab. I had a brother die of alcoholism a year after my wife passed away. He was a great guy, but it was just a demon he could not shake. And every time I've taken somebody to a rehab center, the director and every single counselor is a recovered alcoholic. Every time, every one of them. In fact, that's who I would want. I wouldn't want a practicing alcoholic for my counselor, but I'd want somebody recovered because they would understand. And so God takes even their sins when we mess up, like the brothers of Joseph. This is the size of my shoe. I'm a 15. Fortunately, I'm 6'2", so you don't notice it quite as much if I've been 5'8". But when I was young and short, I was 5'6 as a sophomore. So my feet were growing a whole lot quicker than my height. So I looked like an L that wasn't shaped right. And I received a lot of making fun of, abuse from kids. Well, you've got long feet. Well, thank you, Sherlock, for your observation there. And this bothered me. I was very self-conscious of it. But you know, kids, I didn't make fun of the way people looked when I was in school because it hurts their feelings. Have you had people make fun of something about you? Maybe that's God's way of, hello, McFly. Don't make fun of people. Don't hurt people's feelings. So I'm telling these examples in class again. And a kid raises his hand and tells me his grandfather was in the Naval Academy and ran track. And back then they had those spikes that were like nails. And he got clawed on the back of his heel one time by another racer in another school. Ended his track career and had to be honorably discharged from the Navy from the Academy because he could not do the things necessary for battle. A few years later, he found out Every single person in his graduating class got killed in World War II. Every one of them. Best thing could ever happen to him was it ended his career. But see, now we have to be careful in using these, because if one of those parents heard me use this as an example and their kid got killed, they go, well, what about the Lord on mine? So see, it's perhaps. Perhaps. Up at Woodson Chapel, where I attend, one of our elders, passed away just this past year. He was an outstanding baseball player in high school. In fact, he pitched 2 no-hitters over a weekend when he was in high school. So the Boston Red Sox signed him. This is back in 1948. They signed him right out of high school. He had a full scholarship to go to the University of Virginia. And he passed that up to go into the farm leagues, the minor leagues with Boston. So those of you that like Major League Baseball history, he would have been on the team with Ted Williams. That's the time frame of this. But he messed up his knee on a play. The Red Sox organization wanted him to come back and try it out. He said, no, it's going to take so much work and it's just risky. And so he ended up joining the military. He was in Kentucky on a base, and a friend of his introduced him to a girl. They went out, fell in love. And not only did this girl become his wife, she converted him. And he'll tell you right now, if he was with us, the best thing that ever happened to him was when he lost his Major League Baseball career, because he picked up his wife in salvation. Pretty good trade-off. But you can't see it at the time. Perhaps that's what God was doing. Philippian jailer gets converted. Why? It's from something bad that happened. He was watching a couple of Christians in the prison. And he ends up getting converted because of something bad that happened to those guys getting arrested. I really think this is how God operates. I wished all of our students were required to read The Hiding Place. In school, I think there's a movie coming out on this too, a big one, I think, or it may already be out. But for those of you that are not familiar with the story, Corrie ten Boom was a Hollander, and her family hid Jews from the Nazis during World War II. And her sister got sent to this German prison camp. Okay, now at this camp, they weren't Jewish prisoners. They didn't kill them, but they worked them to death. And here's some actual pictures. Well, this is of the family before that happened. That's her sister Betsy and her were at this particular camp. These are actual women from that camp. This is not Corrie and Betsy, but these are actual women from that horrible camp there. And deplorable conditions. And these are some of the bunks that they stayed in. You see how they're crammed in there. And Betsy, her sister, Corrie's sister. And this is going to sound bad the way I say this. She was almost too spiritual. Now that sounds terrible, me saying that, but it's almost like she's going to just apply everything to the letter. And so they would have a little Bible study, and they came across this verse, "In everything give thanks." And in their barracks, they had fleas. And Betsy said, "Corrie, we got to thank God for the fleas." And she's, "What?"
"Look what it says. In everything give thanks."
And Corrie said, "I'm not thanking God for the fleas." She said, "Look what the verse said." She said, "Okay." And they had a little prayer. "Dear Heavenly Father, thank you for the fleas." Then they found out that the guards were going from compound to compound, from barrack to barrack, and assaulting the women. And they skipped their compound because they had fleas. And when they found that out, they had a devotional and they truly thanked God for the fleas. Perhaps that's what's happening. Now, you might know what this is. It's something really bad. Anybody know? Slave ship. It's unbelievable what happened when people were taken from their homes in Africa in this particular situation, and some of the accounts of the living conditions were worse than what, you know, Corey and them had in Germany. It was unbelievable. A lot of people didn't make it. It's incredible. But God is not going to be defeated by racism and slavery. He's not going to be defeated by that. Okay? Now, what good could come from that? Okay? What good could come from that? Well, aside from the fact that I've had the opportunity to coach a lot of great African-American athletes, I have got friends, students, family that are African-American, black. Aside from that, does anybody know who this guy is? Raise your hand if you know who Brother Marshall Keeble is. If you have your hand up, you're real old, okay? Or you know history. A little humor there, just joking there, a little humor there. Brother Keeble died when I was in the fifth grade, 1968. He was born in 1878, after the Civil War. Both his parents were slaves. Okay, now so he ends up in this country directly because of slavery. This guy, it's estimated that he baptized, or people were baptized at meetings, 50,000 people were converted at his meetings. 50,000. That's what God does with terrible things. He puts it back in the face of Satan. Unbelievable. And this guy, he faced racism and hatred, and he smacked it back with love. Incredible person. Our preacher, you know that little church that I was telling you about where I met Lisa, I was youth minister, our preacher was good friends with Brother Keeble. When Brother Keeble, later in his life, couldn't see well, he drove him to all of his meetings in the later years of his life. This is my seventh grade yearbook. You can probably pick me out there. I feel a lot of sarcasm going through this room right now, and I don't appreciate that one bit. But we're not going to talk about my teeth. My parents didn't get me braces. I had a choice of getting socks or braces, so I chose socks. I could floss with a rope back then. But I had these dreams of playing on our eighth grade basketball team. If you look real close, I'm not on the team. So at the tryouts, here's how we did it, and I had these dreams. At the tryouts, here's what they did for the tryouts the first day. And now I know how terrible this was. We did layups for 30 minutes, and then he cut the team. That's all we did. We didn't play. He watched us do layups. Apparently mine were pretty bad because I got cut. And he went over to a group of us that were going to get it cut and said, y'all might as well go into the locker room. You're going to get cut. That's how he cut us. And so my dreams went right down the tube there, and I did not have that career. You know, I went home crying. I am now glad I got cut that way. Because you know what it taught me as a coach? Don't cut kids like that. There's no good way. If you, like me, have been cut 4 times, it's tough. There's no good way. But there's better ways. And there's horrible ways. That's a horrible way. And so I learned, you don't do that. You don't do that. Where do these two things come? Put together. Let's ask the teenagers. Did y'all go to class that day they covered this? So, okay, someone else. What is this? Okay, this is salt. Makes something tasty. Those two by themselves are poisonous. God takes the poisons of our lives and makes them palatable. You know, we hear the expression, if life hands you lemons, what do? Make lemonade. I like to redefine that. Let God make the lemonade. We don't make the lemonade. When we are handed the lemons of life, God will make the lemonade. That's how it works. You know, those of you that do some cross-stitching, on the backside it looks terrible. But you flip it over and it's something beautiful. I said it was beautiful. More sarcasm. Guest speaker, it's very rude down here, I can see. But God takes the ugliness of our life and He turns it into something that's pretty, at least in my opinion on that one. That's what God does with us. You know, this family that Brent introduced to us, I can't imagine not knowing them. I can't imagine not having my grandchildren. I can't picture that. And the story I told about Brent getting in trouble and what happened to him, I'm not exaggerating how I really feel about that story. Those guys did something terrible to that kid. Now, he lived. Everybody was okay. But God wanted him to go to Free Tardive, and I really believe with all my heart. And I was glad, too, because it saved me money. That was a good thing, too, that the Lord was with me on. But I'm really glad that he ended up getting kicked off my team. You meant it for evil, but God meant it for good. Joseph was placed in charge earlier of Pharaoh's jail, and to get him ready to be in charge of Pharaoh's country. This young girl saved a nation. Perhaps she became royalty for such a time as this. Perhaps. Now, real quickly, and we're going to be within 40 minutes, real quickly. Romans 8:28 does not say the good is for everyone. It says to those that love God and who are called. Okay? Secondly, it doesn't say that God causes the bad. That God goes, there's something bad and I'll turn into something good. It doesn't say that. James says, let no one say when he is tempted, I'm being tempted by God, for God cannot be tempted with evil. He can't do evil. I know he allows it in his permissive will, but he doesn't do it, and he himself tempts no one. Third thing is, the passage does not say you'll like the result. Okay? Now, this really good-looking woman that married me, she didn't have real good eyesight, so she married me. I don't get why she had to die. Okay? That's a special photo to me. And she, you know, she's in a wheelchair here, and her body's really downhill now. And so, you know, you can see the big difference in her. And it's tough. This is a cruise we went on to Alaska that was on her bucket list that we got to do. She was totally crippled. She cannot talk at this point. She cannot walk. And she cannot swallow. We have a hole in her stomach, and we have to feed her formula through that because she can't swallow. She couldn't take the Lord's Supper without choking. She couldn't take the Lord's Supper. And it's been a high state of frustration for me, even though I've had three men come up to me after her funeral and say to me, your wife's funeral changed my wife's life. That's good to hear. But I still don't like that because it's like, why couldn't she live and they read the Bible and have their life changed? But that's not fair, is it? That's not always the way it works. It kills me that she doesn't get to keep impacting her grandkids. I don't get that. I know her faith has inspired a lot of people. And you know, you need to hear the story sometime. Maybe we can do that sometime. The story of her faith is incredible. Not my story of faith. It wasn't great. I was griping and complaining all the time. She never complained one time. Never blamed God. I was always going, why doesn't God give ALS to the terrorist? You're a drug dealer, poof, you get ALS. Why don't the terrible people get ALS? And one day she said, we're all terrible. Okay, she knows Romans 3. Okay. I know a lot of people in hell, but I still don't like it. I'm glad good comes from it, but it's still tough. And fourthly, it might not be working out in this life. Romans 8:28 may not work out in this life. Okay? I think that's important. I'm stopping and staying 100 slides within 40 minutes. That's pretty good, okay? So I'm looking forward to our fellowship dinner right after this. Thank you for having me. We have a Tennessee guy down here and no food. That's pretty rough. So turn it back over to David. Enjoyed being with you guys.